You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Anita Marks with you on this Sunday fun day, beautiful 4th of July. Hopefully everybody is enjoying their weekend. I know the weather wasn't so great yesterday, but hopefully weather is better today. Man, listen, are we not blessed that it's in the 60s on 4th of July? I think we are. Usually it's just smoking hot on a day like today. So hopefully you're out there. Maybe you're going to go play some golf. Maybe you're planning a nice barbecue with the family. I'm actually, for the first time, by the way, Michael is producing the show back in the studio. I'm in my home studio. Michael, happy 4th of July to you, my friend. You've been working the show for an hour now for the golf show. So I have not mentioned and to wish you a happy 4th of July. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Do you have any 4th of July plans today?
We have to see what the weather. Hopefully it holds up, then we'll be able to go out after our shows are over. But if not, then we're stuck inside the house. And I feel like, the past two holidays almost, Memorial Day was a pretty bad weekend too. So hopefully we get some good weather today.
Well, hopefully. I have a bucket list that I'm going to be checking off later on tonight. I'm pretty excited about it. I'm going to be on the Hudson River on a boat for the fireworks. And so something that I've been wanting to do in the 12 to 13 years that I've been living up here. So I'm excited about that tonight. So again, wishing everybody a happy 4th of July. All right. Great show lined up for you. Christy Ackard, who covers the Yankees for the Daily News, is going to be joining us in about 20 minutes. Excited to talk to her. We'll get into some NBA talk as well. Ian Begley is going to join us at 11 o'clock, and we'll take your calls 800-919-3776. And we're going to spend the first hour, if not more, talking about the Yankees. Unfortunate loss against the Mets yesterday, 8-3. Sanchez, of course, with the error behind the plate that allowed a run. Walker gets his 7th win. Smith for the Mets, 3 for 5, 3 ribbies. But more importantly, you know, good for the Mets, right? 42-36, 5.38 winning percentage, top of the National League East. And not to be a negative Nelly here, but really, unfortunately, the story is just how god-awful this Yankees team is. Now they dropped to 41-40. Their team is only hitting their batting average team-wise is 251. They're averaging below 4 runs a game, which is one of the worst in Major League Baseball. And when you look at this lineup, I know I'm not telling you anything you don't know, right? When you look at this lineup, you look at how great they are on paper. But when it comes to the field, let's be honest, something is off. Something is wrong. Something is just way, way wrong. This one of the worst hitting teams in Major League Baseball. And, you know, if you were to hand me the lineup on any given night, you know, your eyes would pop out of your head. Whoa, look at this line. And it's just, it's not computing. It's not computing at all. And, you know, Cashman summed it up. He said, we suck right now. Yeah, Brian, you do. Let's listen in. First and foremost, again, let's give credit where credit is due. Walker took a no-hitter into the 5th. Unfortunately, he did not walk away with a no-hitter, but he did get his 7th win. This is Walker postgame.
Hey, just thinking about getting outs, you know, obviously I know I haven't getting up a hit, but my goal is just go out there, try to get quick outs and make them put the ball in play and let my defense work. You know, defense is really good behind me today. I know what's going on, but again, I'm just trying to go out there, attack the zone and not change anything.
So again, Mets walk away with a win. As we know, the Yankees walk away with a loss. Montgomery, a little over 4 innings, gave up 6 hits, 3 runs, and it was his 3rd loss. Here's Montgomery postgame.
This team has now lost 6 out of 7. What's it going to take to turn things around?
I think we just got to stay together. I mean, no one in that locker room enjoys losing. So we just got to turn it around.
Okay. Well, that was a lot said. I mean, it, what actually, in all honesty, I mean, what more can he say? I guess the bigger question here is, can they turn this around? Is this something that could be turned around as we get closer to the trade deadline? Let's listen in. This is Luke Voit post game.
Never. I don't count this team out at all. Our goal is obviously, you know, we want to win the division, but you know, every spring training, that's our goal, and obviously win the World Series. But you know, obviously, we're just going to do everything we can just to get in the playoffs.
You know, I talked about it at length yesterday, and obviously with the Yankees losing, let's revisit it today. 800-919-3776. And I'm sure Yankee fans want to be optimistic here, and they want to believe that this is something that could be turned around. How do they do it, right? Like, do they go aggressive in regard to helping, bringing in some players who can help them in the outfield, bring in another starting pitcher? You know, hopefully they get Severino and Kluber back, and obviously that's a necessity. Here's another storyline. Didn't spend a lot of time talking about this yesterday, a little bit, not a lot, but like, you know, the sticky stuff that's going on in Major League Baseball. And, you know, I know it's hitting every team. You know, Yu Darvish now has the second lowest spin rate. Garrett Richards, you know, man, what it's really affected him probably more than most. Batting averages in April, 232. Batting averages before April, 232. In June, 244. So batting averages are going up. Spin rate is going down. But, you know, there's some pitchers that are being affected more than most. And unfortunately for the Yankees, it's their bullpen, which coming into the season was supposed to be one of their biggest strengths, was supposed to be one of the best bullpens in Major League Baseball. But obviously Chapman, you look at his numbers since Major League Baseball has been looking for that sticky stuff, and he's just blown up. And Garrett Cole, unfortunately, Garrett Cole, his ERA since early June, 4.65. So pitching, both starting pitching and bullpen, no bueno. Lineup, right-handed power pitchers going up against Gardner, who's batting 190, and Adore, who's batting 210. Hicks, not returning this season, no bueno. You know, to sit here and put the finger on one player or one manager, well, obviously there is only one manager on the team, but to point the finger at Boone, to point the finger at a certain player, there's a number of things. There's a magnitude of things that are wrong with this Yankees team. And that's why I think it would be a very tall task, to right this ship. Maybe I'm wrong. 800-919-3776. Before we take a break, let's listen in. This is Aaron Boone post game, talking about, you know, exactly what I'm talking about. And that is, you know, do you still have hope for this team this season?
The history of this game is littered with, you know, teams overcoming larger obstacles than this with half a season to go. But, you know, but I would say that's like completely getting ahead of ourselves. We got to go play good baseball and become a great team to put ourselves in position to even think about that. And, you know, we've gotten a very important day tomorrow, obviously a doubleheader, but you know, you can't start thinking about a margin you got to chase down. We got to go play well and become the team we expect to be, or else that becomes a moot point.
Exactly what Aaron just said, and that is the pressure, because you know, you've got errors that are taking place. You've got a team in the Yankees that is hitting into double plays, hitting more ground balls than line drives, especially in that short porch, or home runs. You've got a pitching staff that is struggling, both starting pitchers and the bullpen. There's so much. This team isn't hitting. There's so much going on, but now it's compounded by, I'm talking about it. Every show here on 98.7 ESPN is talking about it. Fans are talking about it. Fans are screaming for Aaron Boone to get fired. There's talk that Brian Cashman is on the hot seat. So what happens? Now these players, they're putting the pressure on themselves. And what happens when you put that pressure? It's hard. Now you're reaching, you're struggling, bad pitch selection. Things are just, it's a snowball effect of just the worst storm possible. And I think the Yankees are going to be lucky to not get swept. I mean, I know Garrett Cole is going for the Yankees today, but again, has not been pitching well since Major League Baseball has been looking for that sticky stuff. We'll see what happens today. 800-919-3776, the phone number. Yankee fans, get on board. Now's the time. I'd like to hear from you. I'm sure you're frustrated after yesterday's game. What are your thoughts? What do you think is going to happen today in the doubleheader? And more importantly, moving forward, do you believe that this is an organization that can turn it around? And how can they turn it around? How do you envision it being turned around? And if it's not, what would you like to see the Yankees do, the Steinbrenners do, heading into next season? I know that we're only at the midway point, maybe talking about next season, talking about what could be. Maybe it's a little too soon, but maybe not.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
It's frustrating. It's, you know, we're all, you know, pissed off about it, obviously. We've set a much higher bar in there, and we haven't to this point lived up to that. So, you know, we've got to turn it around in a big time way if we're going to get to be the team we want to be. But, you know, it's certainly been frustrating to this point. And I know guys are upset and not okay with it. You know, I'll never be embarrassed about what those guys put in and what we, you know, try to do on a regular basis. Proud to be associated with them, but you know, we all understand it's got to be better.
Aaron Boone talking to the media. Yeah, we all know it's got to be better. Christy Ackert joins us now, covers the Yankees for the Daily News. Christy, happy 4th of July. Thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Happy 4th of July.
Well, let's start right there before we dive into the Subway Series. You know, the frustration that we hear from Aaron Boone, you know, hosting Sports Talk Radio and is the Yankees have been struggling, you know, I've probably received more calls on Boone needs to go than anything else. Your thoughts on Boone and how he's managing this team and what this season has been like for him?
I think it's been obviously frustrating for him. I mean, you know, on paper, this team should be much better than they are. But in reality, he's been given a very limited roster, a very inflexible roster, and a roster that had to have a lot of things go right for them to be successful. So, you know, he may not be your kind of manager in terms of, you know, he's not fiery, but he will always support his players, which he feels will get the best out of them. You know, I'm not going to blame him for these losses because, you know, he doesn't pick his own roster. You know, this isn't football. Like you said, you can't go out there and scream at them every day until they, you know, play better. You know, they play too many games for that. So I wouldn't put this on Boone. You know, I mean, there may be other things that you don't like about him, you know, maybe in the past, but this year is not on him.
You know, it is interesting. Yesterday I compared it to like Eli Manning, right? Like, you know, image is everything, as Andre Agassi mm-hmm. once said years ago, right? Like, you know, what you see isn't always what you get, especially when it comes to a human being. You know, I think I covered the Giants for almost 7 years, and you know, the image that I think Giants fans have of Eli Manning, the reality is he's a much different person than the personality that you saw on the football field every Sunday. Right. So with that being said, like, you know, you've got your finger on the pulse of this team, you know, even though Boone might not come across as being fiery, you know, he's definitely not that Billy Martin or Girardi type of manager. But, you know, what do the players say about him? Does he have that clubhouse? Does he have the respect? You know, should this organization, or do you think will this organization consider possibly letting him go if the Yankees don't make it to the postseason?
Well, I think that was pretty clear from what Hal Steinbrenner said the other day, You know, he wasn't ready to commit to him beyond this year. I do think he has the clubhouse. You know, he has gone out of his way, you know, as long as he has been the manager there, to make sure he has that clubhouse. And I don't know if that's because he was a player or what, but he goes out of his way. I mean, you know, there are a lot of things he says publicly that protect his players. If you watch him very, very closely in the dugout, occasionally you will see him flinch and maybe be, you know, annoyed with a play or something. And there have been plenty this year that a manager could lose his, you know, his head over. But he will never publicly embarrass his players. And, you know, I think that probably earns him a lot of trust in that clubhouse. Whether it earns him another contract, I don't know.
Again, Christy Eckert joining us here. You can see her work on the Daily News covering all things Yankees. I had Eric Bolin on my show yesterday, and he kind of alluded that there was a disconnect inside the organization in regard to the analytics versus the human element of making decisions. Do you know the percentage of, you know, and I know every club's different, every organization is different in regard to how they value or the percentage that they do pay attention to analytics. Do you know where that sits and stands right now with the Yankees? And how that operates?
I mean, I wouldn't know a percentage, but I would say that I've talked to a lot of scouts who are in the organization that don't feel like they're listened to. Pro scouts, advanced scouts, amateur scouts, you know, that they feel like the analytics department is driving pretty much everything. And, you know, you can see that kind of in the minor league system right now. You know, they used to have a lot of, you know, coaches who were teachers who had played the game. I'm going to boot on the names, but like Phil Plantier was the AAA hitting coach, and the analytics department saw that Gio Urshela had some skill. Well, Phil saw that he could probably be a better major league hitter if he started doing a few different things. So he worked with him, right? And he turned him into a major league hitter. Well, Phil's no longer with the Yankees. He's with the Marlins now because, you know, they decided to go a little more heavy in analytics and player development. The guy who spent a lot of time trying to teach Clint Frazier how to be an outfielder, he's gone. So I think that's kind of what is being reflected.
Interesting. Great information. Great inside information there, Christy. Okay, so we talked about Boone. We talked about the analytics department. What about Brian Cashman? You know, he came out. He said, "Listen, we suck right now." Yeah, Brian, you do. You know, but like you said, you know, earlier when we were talking about Boone, this is an inflexible roster. How much of that of the onus in regard to this roster comes down to Cashman? And I know a big topic is he on the hot seat? Majority of people that I speak to say no. Your thoughts on Cashman and this roster this season, Christy?
You know, I don't think he's on the hot seat because I do believe that Hal Steinbrenner has a trust in him that will be hard for him to, you know, fire him or, you know, let him go after his contract is up, I believe, at the end of next year. And there might be a discussion, but, you know, I don't see him on the hot seat right now. How much of the blame does he take? He should take a majority of it, as far as I'm concerned. You know, they didn't get Shohei Ohtani, which, you know, is fine. They did their best. They tried their hardest. The pivot to get Giancarlo Stanton has pretty much handcuffed them. You know, he doesn't play the outfield anymore. So he's locked into that DH, which is a spot you probably needed for Gary Sanchez, you know, on the days Garrett Cole pitches when, you know, he's not going to pitch to Gary. You need that for Aaron Judge to try and keep him healthy. That's a spot that you could rotate guys through to help keep them fresh, but you can't because you need to keep Stanton's bat in the lineup. You know, I will be very curious to see, you know, how Garrett Cole pitches the rest of the year. You know, they've committed a large part of their payroll going forward to Garrett Cole. And is he going to be the same pitcher that they signed now that he's not using whatever it was he was using? You know, he's told us he's had to make adjustments since MLB cracked down on the sticky stuff. So, I mean, those are two contracts that are going to be hard to get out from under. And they limit. If you're not going to go over the luxury tax threshold, they're going to limit what the Yankees do for years.
It really is interesting. One more thing in regard to the roster, and that's the lineup. Listen, as we know, right-handed power pitchers, you know, is the trend right now in Major League Baseball. And, you know, you look at it to counter that, you know, Gardner's batting 120, Adore is batting 210. Hicks, right? Not expected back this season. So, you know, mm-hmm. as we get closer to trade deadline, you know, is that outfield starting pitching, but is that something you feel that the Yankees are going to be eyeing and try to improve the lineup in regard to countering and going up against those right-handed power pitchers in Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I mean, you saw it yesterday with Walker. All he needed were some fastballs and sliders to get some out. Mm-hmm. I do think that's going to be something they're going to be looking for. You know, I mean, if I'm Hal Steinbrenner, though, I'm not sure I'm going to go over the luxury tax threshold for this team right now. I mean, they're one game over 500. Am I going to spend all that money to barely make the playoffs or miss the playoffs? I mean, this team has a lot to show before the trade deadline, before I would say that they say they're still buyers, but that doesn't seem fiscally responsible if they're not even going to be, you know, that far above 500 in 2 weeks.
Christy, you mentioned Gerrit Cole, and I want to go even further, and we're talking about the sticky stuff. You know, I want to say I had read where Gerrit Cole, his ERA in June, since early June, is 4.65. And Chapman as well mm-hmm. has been struggling since Major League mm-hmm. Baseball is trying to, you know, get a grip, no pun intended, of the sticky stuff. and the bullpen was one of the strongest elements, right? Strongest part of this team coming in. They're kind of blowing up. And you're right. I'm curious to see how Gerrit Cole is going to pitch today. You know what? And again, and I brought this question up with Eric yesterday. I thought it was a pretty good question. I'm curious, as we get closer to the trade deadline and teams that want to make moves and want to go out there and bring in pitchers, are you going to pay more attention to the ERAs this past June? Because those mm-hmm. that now aren't using the sticky stuff, like, you know, Yu Darvish, from what I understand, now has the second slowest spin rate in Major League Baseball. Since he stopped using whatever he's been using. So it's a tale of really it's Jekyll and Hyde. Like what pitcher are you going to get? Right?
Well, you've got to be very careful of that. I mean, and Gerrit Cole's a cautionary tale. I mean, he's a very good pitcher. Don't get me wrong. I mean, he's a really good pitcher even without this, but he was next level, you know, before this. So, yeah, you have to be very careful. I mean, yes, you're going to look at all the stats and spin rates from June. You're also going to rely on a lot of reputation. I mean, whether guys said they had heard of Spider Tech or not before, they heard the rumors about who was using what. So I'm sure there are, you know, plenty in the front office that are saying, yeah, watch him because he was a sticky stuff guy. I mean, you have to be very careful because, you know, you could get stuck, you know, with a guy that's not the guy that you thought you were getting.
Exactly. It's just it's really, really bizarre. All right. Let's sum this up. A doubleheader today, as we know, unfortunately, they lost to the Mets yesterday. Doubleheader today. Cole obviously pitching in one of those. What do you expect in these two games, Christy?
You know, I hope to see a little more life from the Yankees. Yesterday was not a good look at all. I do think you will see Cole come out and pitch well. He does have a knack for the big moments, and he considers this a big moment. You know, this team is going to be 500 if they lose their next game, and he's your ace. So this is the game he needs to win. He's supposed to be your stopper, and I think you'll see him step up because he is emotional like that. You never know what to expect with this Yankees team. That's the problem. The only thing that has been consistent about them all year is inconsistency. So, you know, it's always kind of a surprise. They could come out and you know, go crazy and score 11 runs, or they could get, you know, no hit through five innings.
As we know, Judge had that player only meeting on Tuesday. Did you have an opportunity to speak to any of the players in regard to that? I know I heard what Judge had to say. Any of the other players comment on the meeting to you?
Yeah, I mean, they said that there was a lot of airing out, I mean, of what they thought needed to be picked up. There wasn't so much as calling out each other maybe as was presented, but there was, you know, like, this needs to happen and it needs to happen now. It's the kind of the same thing you would expect from any team meeting at that point. At the same time, I mean, you know, they've gone 1-2 since that happened. So, you know, I know that team meetings can be important. I don't know that they're that important in baseball because it's just such a long season and it's hard for them to kind of get attraction after those things. It's very rare. I don't think you hear about team meetings as much. So, you know, they had one right after the Boston series, but they got swept at home too. So it's, you know, I don't know that that's the answer.
Well, you know, I don't know if it's the answer either, considering they didn't look great yesterday against the Mets. Christy, so appreciate your time on this 4th of July. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.
Thanks. You too.
You got it. Christy Ackert, make sure you follow her on all things social media and read her coverage of the Yankees on, I should say, the Daily News. A lot to unpack there. 800-919-3776. Yankee fans, your thoughts on what Christy had to say? I thought she gave us some pretty good nuggets. The one that really stood out to me was how the scouting department, their scouts that have been on in part of this Yankees organization who feel that, quote unquote, they are not being listened to. It's evident now in talking with Eric Bolin yesterday from Newsday and Christy Ackert today from the Daily News, that there is a disconnect. There is some friction. There's some frustration. There's in that front office. And I know we want to point the finger. I know Yankee fans want to point the finger at Boone. Another thing she said is it's not Boone's fault. You know, this is an inflexible roster.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Just that we have the pieces. Like we got the talent. We got guys that you see we can do it, and you see the flashes that we can do it. It's hard. Like this shit is hard as hell, and it's it's not easy. They've been here multiple times before and haven't been able to take that next step. And I think for us, being able to go through this for a first time early, it's really good for us. I think it'll only help us.
It is Trey Young. Anita Marks with you. Hour two, really kind of hour three, had the golf show at 8 a.m. Without further ado, Mark Zeno, good friend of mine, worked together in Baltimore. Now he's in Hotlanta covering all things Atlanta sports. Mark, good morning. Good morning. Happy 4th of July to you and your beautiful family. How you doing, my friend?
Good morning, Anita. Always the greatest of pleasures to be on with you.
You're sweet. You're sweet. And by the way, again, 4th of July, I know a lot to celebrate, and please know how much we celebrate and we appreciate your service to our country, my friend.
Thank you very much.
So let's dive into it. I said this about 10 minutes ago. Not to take anything. Listen, I have fallen in love with a number of these young players this postseason. I love this postseason this year in the NBA. No big name stars, except Giannis, of course. But and not to take anything away from Chris Paul, but like I have fallen in love with the Trae Youngs and the Devin Bookers, and you know a lot of these. Like I love John Collins, right? Like Ayton. I'm really enjoying this season, and Trae's been tremendous. But I'll be honest with you, I know it was a game six. It was a crucial game six. They lost. Now they're done. But I wonder if this team would have been better without Trae Young. 35 minutes, 14 points, 0-4 from downtown, shot 25%, 3 turnovers in the first half. Not good, Mark.
No, I mean, it definitely wasn't a Trae Young type game, right? It wasn't his typical output. I mean, I get what you're saying, and you can second guess this if the cows come home. I think what really matters, it's a game six elimination game. if he's healthy enough to go, you got to put him out there. I mean, look, statistically, when Trae Young is not on the floor, their PER is awful. Like, they are a bad offensive team when Trae is not on the floor. He's that much of an impact type player. So it's really a gamble. Like, you knew he wasn't 100%. You knew he definitely was trying to grit it out. But I think, you know, when you just look at things from percentage standpoint, analytics standpoint, all that stuff, they're a worse team without Trae Young. And to roll the dice with that in an elimination game is a really, really tough go. And you know what? More than anything, Anita, like, look big picture for this whole thing. You know, if Trae Young sits that game out, people are always going to question his toughness. Like, how could you not go in an elimination game to get to the NBA, right? Like, you know, it's that whole sort of Jay Cutler moment in the NFL where you just wonder, how are you sitting this thing out? Like, you know, if you had a broken leg, you just hobble your ass out there and try to figure out a way to get this to win a game. I mean, so I think in the big picture, he definitely needed to play. It wasn't his best game. It wasn't Kevin Herter's best game. The entire offense was bad. Their defense was bad. Their offense was bad. That's why they got beat. But, you know, I don't think anybody has any reservations about Trae Young playing last night.
And again, I've become a fan for sure. I've absolutely become a fan. Looking on the opposite side of the ball, Money Middleton, boy, 23 points in the third quarter alone. Even with Giannis, when you look at the total postseason, Mark, even with Giannis on the court, Middleton really has been the key. Look at the games that the Bucks have won compared to the Bucks that had the games that the Bucks have lost. You know, you've got Giannis who's still putting up, you know, double double, obviously, but triple doubles in some. In the games that they've lost, but the games that they've won, it's when Middleton steps up and he has monster games. And sure enough, he was able to do it without Giannis on the court last night.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's that premise in the NBA, right? You know, we always talk about the big three, right? There's always a three superstar thing, but in reality, your superstar definitely needs at least one other guy. The Batman needs a Robin at a minimum. You saw it last year, LeBron James is Anthony Davis, right? You really only need the pair because the third piece is just one of those extra pieces that not a lot of teams can afford. But when you are the Bucks, you know, after Giannis, you need Middleton to have big games routinely. And he's been doing it without, you know, Giannis in the lineup. But as you said, when he's that type of player, he can change an offense. The Hawks, it's the same thing. Like, after Trae, you know, it's John Collins, and there's so much consternation here in Atlanta whether John Collins deserves a max contract. Should they offer him a max contract? Is he a max guy? He's probably going to get one somewhere from somebody just because it's hard to find guys with his skill set, right? But a lot of us here in Atlanta question whether he really is a good enough number two or a consistent enough number two to be able to elevate this team to be a title contender. You know, I think that's a big part of it. When Middleton is playing the way he is, the Bucks rather are just a completely different team. So it's super important to have that number two guy that really elevates things.
Mark Zeno joining us from Hotlanta, has his own sports talk radio show in the Atlanta area. Let's look big picture now as the Bucks now advance and they're taking on the Suns. I love the Suns. I put money down on this, even though it was a lot of juice. I got it. I want to say -178, -175 2 days ago. But listen, no significant injuries, really. Time to heal, you know, Booker's face and Chris Paul's wrist / shoulder, whatever stinger it is. Ayton's been dominant in the paint. Not sure if Giannis is going to be able to go game one. Crowder sets the tone for this team. Like him or hate him, dude's feisty. And I love that. I think the Suns are the team of destiny. Handicapping this game moving this championship series moving forward, I've got the Suns winning it in six. What do you have?
I would agree with you. It's probably Suns in six. I mean, it depends. If Giannis can play, and it doesn't look like he can, I would probably lean on the Bucks. But I'm with you that Suns in six if Giannis isn't healthy for this series. And really, I mean, in the big picture, like this is a legacy-defining series for both Chris Paul and Giannis. You know, you win a title, and all of a sudden it changes everything about the way you're viewed in the pantheon of NBA greats. For Chris Paul, he's definitely going to be a Hall of Famer, but you start to elevate him. You know, is he a top five point guard of all time when you win a title, right? Same thing for Giannis. He's a two-time MVP. I mean, there are a lot of two-time MVPs who have, you know, NBA championships under their record. Giannis might be the only one who doesn't at this point. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's a huge, huge legacy-defining NBA finals for both of those players. But I'm with you. I think it's the Suns are the more complete team. I think they're the deeper team. To a certain extent, I think when you go 1 through 5, 1 through 7, as far as depth is concerned, they're the more talented team. And I think in reality, they just got more firepower, and I'm with you. I think Suns and Six is probably where the sharp money is.
Again, Mark Zeno joining us out of Atlanta while I have you on. Let's switch gears. Let's talk a little football. I like Atlanta this season. I know, you know, all the focus obviously is on Tom Brady in the Bucs and, you know, who's going to win the quarterback battle with the Saints. But I like this Atlanta team. I think they're flying low on the radar. I don't think enough people are paying attention to them. You know, people might not realize this, but their offensive linemen, right, all five are first round draft picks. Last time I checked, tell me if I'm wrong. I think a lot of people are sleeping on Matt Ryan. I think he still has it. I know no Julio Jones, but Calvin Ridley to me is the guy that really can step up. And for God's sakes, you guys drafted, in my opinion, the best player in college football in Kyle Pitts. I already got my Kyle Pitts jersey. That's how much I love it. Kyle Pitts is the kind of he is the type of player. You know me, Mark, in my fantasy football. He is the one guy I want on every single one of my rosters. So with that being said, kind of, you know, what's the talk of the town right now? What are some of the storylines heading into training camp with the Falcons?
Well, I'm certainly not as bullish on the Falcons as you are. The minute they traded Julio Jones, the first thing I did was make the bet for the Falcons under 7.5 wins. I don't see it. Like, you're not better offensively by trading your best offensive player. Yes, Matt Ryan still has it. That's not the issue. That's not the question. The question is the defense isn't improved. So does Dean Pease coach this defense to a level where it's never been before? It's a tough ask. You have no real running game. I mean, Mike Smith, you know, I suppose he's going to be a workhorse kind of guy. And when you draft Kyle Pitts, you know, I mean, obviously in the background, they knew Julio was gone when they drafted Kyle Pitts, but Kyle Pitts is not going to replace Julio Jones' production, nor is he going to be able to change defenses the way Julio does. And Calvin Ridley is a great receiver. He's an excellent route runner. He's got secure hands. I mean, he's a phenomenal receiver, but he's not Julio Jones. And nobody shades coverage to Calvin Ridley the way they do for Julio Jones. And so I question how much better this offense will be. I think Kyle Pitts in 2 or 3 years will be that impact player. But I have yet to see a rookie tight end come in and make a huge impact on an offense. I mean, Kyle Pitts is not going to have Travis Kelce numbers. He's not going to put up George Kittle type numbers. Like, he's just the offense isn't designed that way. Arthur Smith uses his tight ends in a phenomenal fashion. He did it last year in Tennessee. Uses them in a phenomenal fashion inside the red zone. You know, like, Jonnu Smith, I think he got 8 touchdowns last year, but he had 35 receptions the entire year. Will that change? Will they try to split out Pitts and get him out wide? Maybe, yeah, I suppose they could, but are you going to throw him 75, 80 balls this year when you have Calvin Ridley out there? I don't see it. Like, I'm struggling to see how you divvy up the offense. Why you're not going to take opportunities away from Calvin Ridley, who's a proven commodity, to give him to Kyle Pitts. So I just wonder how it's all going to come together. And it's a lot for a first-time head coach and a first-time staff to walk into a division with the defending Super Bowl champions and the New Orleans Saints, who still are a thorn in your side, and think that you can leapfrog one out of two of those teams, let alone both of them. I mean, to the other end, you know, talking about a team that I'm bullish on, the Carolina Panthers. I mean, watch what Matt Rhule and Joe Brady do. I think that is a above 500 team this year. I think they can get in the playoffs this year. Just watch what happens and the way Matt Rhule coaches. I think he is an under-the-radar and an under-the-radar sort of a coach and team that's going to surprise a lot of people this year. So
listen,
I'm not really
I think
– Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not all that bullish on the Falcons. I think they're going to struggle in year one under Arthur Smith. You know, again, they have very little cap room to make any sort of impact moves anywhere. And, yes, the offensive line is a huge question. If Matt Hennessy starts at center, he was a third-round pick. If he starts at center, you know, you're talking about, with the exception of Jake Matthews, 4 of the 5 dudes on this offensive line have been in the league under 3 years. It's a lot to ask of a very young offensive line to protect an aging quarterback who's not mobile in this offense. So, again, I fail to see how they get to 8-9 wins. And you're going to need at least that to get into the playoffs with the 17th game. And I just don't see it for the Falcons. I think they're under 7.5.
I love what you said about Carolina. I'm with you. And I personally, I'd like to see Carolina do well because I think you know, Sam Darnold just got the poop end of the stick here in New York. That's for sure. I do disagree with you. By the way, Atlanta, look at the division they play, right? You know, they start off with the Eagles. That's a win right there. I'm looking at their schedule. They're at the Giants. Okay, I think that's going to be competitive. They play the Jets. They play the Dolphins. They play the Jags. It's a very favorable. They play the Lions. I mean, it's a very favorable schedule. I don't know. I might bottle wine with that over under. What's the over under? You said 7.5, 6.5. What is it?
Yeah. 7.5, yeah, and I'll take that.
7.5. All right. I'll take the over. I'll take 8 wins. You take below 8 wins. Bottle wine, my friend. Let's end on this. In regard to the Kyle Pitts, I love you, man, but I think you're dead wrong. This young man is special. He's otherworldly. I understand what you said about the offense that you're expecting the offensive coordinator to put together because it's what he's done in the past. But Kyle Pitts is such a special player. You throw that offense out the window and you scheme for this guy. He is not going to come off the field. You've got Hayden. To me, Hurst is going to be your tight end. Kyle Pitts is going to be your slash player. So sometimes he'll line up on the line next to the offensive lineman as a tight end slot. Sometimes he will go wide out. They're going to put him all over the field and they are going to throw him the ball all day long. Like, I can't wait.
Yeah. I don't disagree. I just haven't.
I know,
seen
but you're,
it
not, like, you're not as excited as I am.
Well, I know, but you know, I mean, look, you look at these things through a different lens. I think he's definitely that kind of talent, right? I don't think that's in debate. It's just a question of how you use him, and there's only one football to go around. And if I'm Arthur Smith, I'm going to lean more on Calvin Ridley than I would on Pitts. 100%. They could scheme him totally differently than what he did in Tennessee. They're probably smart to do that. I just haven't seen it yet. And so without a sample size for me to go off of, I can only go off of what I've seen Arthur Smith do in the past. And again, if they do that, sure. But is he going to put up Julio-type numbers that makes this offense a top-10 offense? I don't know. Especially with a rookie, it's a tough stretch for me to believe that they can do that in year one. I think maybe year two, year three, you could see a completely different set of numbers and an explosion for Kyle Pitts. Year one, with a brand-new head coach, I'm a little skeptical.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us on this 4th of July weekend. Appreciate you, my friend. Happy 4th of July to you and your family.
Thanks, Anita. You're the best.
You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
No, honestly, it's been a long journey, but it's been a great journey. It's been worth it. We put ourselves in position to win the NBA Finals. After winning 15 games in our first year here, say some years not making the playoffs to 3 years, well, the last 2 years, thinking we had a chance and we just didn't do enough. And now we're here. This is what we worked for. And we're just, extremely happy that we're still playing.
The Bucks. That was Middleton. Money Middleton. 23 points in the third quarter last night. Played 43 minutes, 32 points total. Just really, in my opinion, again, has been the straw that has stirred this Bucks drink. That's for sure. Without further ado, let's bring in Ian Begley, extraordinaire, covering all things NBA, especially on SNY, and has his own digital NBA show called The Putback. Happy 4th of July to you and your lovely family, Ian. Always great to have you on. Thank you, my friend.
I need it to you, too. Thanks so much. Always great to be with you.
Before we start talking local, let's talk big picture. As we know, the Bucks, they beat the Hawks last night 118-107 to advance, and now we've got a Bucks-Suns championship. I made this comment earlier, and I'm sure a lot of people disagree with me, but I feel that Trae Young playing yesterday hurt the Hawks more than helped them. 35 minutes, 14 points, 3 turnovers in the first half, 0-4 from downtown, only shot 25%. I very well could be extremely wrong here, but just curious to get your thoughts on this Hawks team and of course, the Bucks winning to advance.
Well, you know, with Trae Young, clearly he wasn't himself in that game, and it might have hurt them. But at the same time, if he wants to play, if he's healthy enough to play, you're not going to sit him out if you're the Hawks coaching staff or the front office. You have to ride with him. But it was a noble effort by Trae. And big picture, I mean, he really put himself on the map for, like, the casual NBA fan who may not have been paying close attention to what Trae Young was doing in Atlanta. He's been fantastic this entire postseason, particularly on the road. And he sent a message to the rest of the league that he's going to be here for a while, and maybe the Hawks will be here for a while. But Milwaukee, just so impressive. The depth without Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, and on and on and on. Those guys were fantastic. And to me, going into the finals, I mean, what happens with Giannis? When is he back? That is the biggest question to me going into this thing as the Bucks prepare for the Suns.
Let me ask you this, though, Ian. You know, let's say, hypothetically speaking, you know, Giannis is ready to come back. I'm still taking the Suns in the series. I think they're the team of destiny this year. I don't think he'll be 100% in the series, but let's just say, hypothetically speaking, with a 75-80% Giannis, who do you have here? You have the Bucks or you have the Suns?
I'm with you. I think the Suns would take it. The depth, the poise, I think, you know, Devin Booker is going to be so much for Milwaukee to handle with or without Giannis Antetokounmpo. And, you know, this is a big step up in class from the Hawks. When you're talking about the Phoenix Suns, Chris Paul may not be 100% either, but he was phenomenal in that closing game, even though he was banged up. So he's playing incredibly well for this team. And obviously, they have a lot of weapons, a lot of depth defensively. They're solid. So, yeah, I like Phoenix, too, going into it, depending on how Giannis is throughout the series.
You know, our producer, Michael, sent me, I guess you had posted, and you know, just the thought process and the possibility of Chris Paul, when it's all said and done, coming and playing for the Knicks next year. Kind of give me some insight into that possibility. What's the probability of it happening, and how would it happen?
Yeah, I think the most likely scenario here is Chris Paul opting out of the player option he has for next season, signing a multi-year contract with the Suns. You know, Phoenix has every reason to keep him for the obvious, you know, him playing such a pivotal role in lifting them to the finals. They're winning for the first time in Devin Booker's young career, and that's very important to Booker, and Booker in turn is so important to that franchise. So I can't see a logical scenario where Phoenix does not re-sign Chris Paul. But, you know, some agents of point guards in the 2021 free agency class are looking at things, and they're worried that if Paul opts out and doesn't re-sign with Phoenix, the Knicks are right there, and they're worried about that because it takes away a potential option for their client. And so the Knicks would have the cap space to do it. They had interest in trading for Paul last offseason, so the interest would still be there if a scenario presented itself. But I think, yeah, most likely Phoenix gets a deal done for Chris Paul. He goes back there on a multi-year deal and probably rides out the rest of his career there.
Yeah, I especially, you know, I look at Chris Paul. He's so West Coast to me, right? Like, you know, I think he stays out West. What about, you know, this summer with the Knicks and some of the players that, I know no bells and whistles next summer, from what I understand, is really the big possibility of some big names that could become available. But, you know, who is realistically on the radar this summer, whether it's in free agency or a possible trade that could likely become a Knicks player this season?
Right. You know, because we are where we are in the calendar, it's still hard to say what's likely and what's unlikely. A lot of things are being discussed behind the scenes, that the Knicks have so many different options, so many different ways they can go. I think the first position to look at is point guard, and they could go veteran route. Kyle Lowry, Chris Paul would be a veteran, Mike Conley, those kinds of players. They could go for younger guards, like Dennis Schroeder. Or one school of thought, and this had been kind of brought up internally over the course of the season, was maybe given the amount that the offense was run through Julius Randle and given that RJ Barrett had the ball in his hands a decent amount last year, maybe they don't need a ball-dominant point guard. Maybe they want to spend money more so on a ball handler, but somebody who could knock down shots and play defense and doesn't need the ball in his hands all the time to be effective. And a couple of names that I'm keeping an eye on that fill that description would be Devontae Graham, with the Hornets, restricted free agent, Kendrick Nunn, restricted free agent with Miami. Those are just the names that come up. Lonzo Ball, we talked a lot about him prior to the trade deadline. I still can't get a good read on whether there's a consensus about how the Knicks feel about Lonzo or not. He'll be a restricted free agent as well. But the top line item for the Knicks, if they can get something done, is to acquire a good lead guard.
Again, Ian Begley joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You can see all his work on SNY and, of course, the digital NBA show called The Putback. I had you on during the season and of course, in the postseason, we were talking about how, what such a great feel it was to this Knicks season, even though they lost in the first round to Atlanta. Just the mere fact that, A, they got into the postseason and they were able to host the first round as the home court advantage was huge. What's your feeling right now in the brand of the Knicks as we advance into next season? I know you and I touched on it a little bit that this season really helped the Knicks brand moving forward amongst owners and general managers and agents and players. Are you still getting that feeling? Are you still getting that vibe?
Yeah, I don't think much has changed on that end. And Anita, before I get into that, I'd be remiss not to mention Spencer Dinwiddie, free agent, as a potential option. But I do think that they took a step forward here, right? They I think what they've said publicly is how people view it externally around the league. They took a big step forward in kind of building a foundation of a winning culture and putting a part of a roster together that can maybe, with the right pieces, turn into a perennial playoff team and a contender. And I think you didn't see a lot of the off-the-court stuff that had hurt the Knicks so often over the last couple of decades, the unforced errors, I like to call them, that happened with ownership on down that hurt the perception of the team. That wasn't at play this year. It was just about basketball, about the wins and losses, and I think that's also a positive. So the idea that they took a step forward, won a lot of games, have young players who look like they could be part of a core of a winning team, and there's no nonsense off the court, I do think that the perception externally is a positive one of this club.
Last one for you, and then I'll let you get on with your 4th of July Sunday fun day, is Julius Randle, right? Like, great season, went into the postseason, and became a shell of himself, whether it's the defense that McMillan had game planned for, whether the stage was just too big, whatever the case. And so, what should fans think about? What should fans consider moving forward with Randle? What do you think the organization thinks of Randle? How do they consider him? Are they going to, up the money and pay him? What do you think his role is going to be moving forward? Give us a preview of what we could expect from Julius Randle and this Knicks organization.
Yeah, all very good questions. The sense that I have is, they obviously love Julius, but I think that, there's a big picture thought that, we need more. We need more. And whether that means Julius is a 1A or 1B to another star that they would acquire, I don't know. But they know they need more. And so they will be on the lookout for those opportunities for top talent to help build. But it's with Julius, right? It's not let's get rid of Julius. That's not the sense that I get. And so you talk about extending him. The Knicks can offer him a max extension on his contract for 4 years and a little over $100 million. To me, it seems like a below-market deal for Randle, given how he played this season. So I think that, if he gets offered that, which I don't know why he wouldn't, he'd probably turn it down. Maybe the Knicks go smaller number of years on the extension, and that gives Randle a chance to get into free agency quicker. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I don't think that anything that happened in the playoffs vastly changed how the Knicks view Julius Randle big picture. It probably just maybe reinforced a little bit that you need more with Randle if you want to be a perennial playoff team. But there was no sense of, okay, let's get rid of this guy after his first playoff series.
I said this before. I've said this a few times. You know, I have fallen back in love with the NBA this season. You know, and because of guys like Julius Randle, because of guys like Trae Young, because of guys like Devin Booker, I've really I don't know about you, Ian, but I've really enjoyed this season. I've thoroughly enjoyed this postseason, even though we don't have a lot of the big name stars that are active and attractive and made it to the championship game. So we'll see. I have a new love for this game after this season. I really do. So, and I'm sure this is a fun time to be covering the Knicks for you, because it's been quite a few years where I'm sure it has not been fun.
Well, I always find it fun. I always enjoy it. Just whether you're enjoying watching actual basketball or you're covering other stuff off the court, but there's always something to talk about with the Knicks. I appreciate that. And Anita, I'm sure Adam Silver likes to hear what you said about really enjoying the season without the big name stars, because the fear is, you know, you're losing that, not that you're a casual fan, but you're losing a fan who is not paying attention no matter who's on the court, because you don't have LeBron or Kevin Durant, top players. So the idea that you're still into it, even with those guys off the court, is a good thing. And I'm sure somebody at the league office would be smiling when they hear that.
Ian, thank you so much. Again, happy 4th of July to you and your beautiful family. Always great having you on. Appreciate you, my friend. Enjoy.
Likewise, Anita. Take care. Thanks.